You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. Next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Well, just as the telephone revolutionised the way we communicate, the internet is certainly the next major communications revolution. Instead of old analogue voice technology, everything is now going digital. Our voice, along with pictures and sound and data, makes up streams of ones and zeros, which flow down fibre optic cables and copper wires. The network which carries this information is made up of millions, if not billions, of switches, routers and servers, and is broadly called the internet. Back when the new fandangled telephone was all the rage, government and institutions devised the rollout of this new highly sophisticated, revolutionary technology. Looking back on it now, from all appearances, it went uneventfully well. In Australia, the government body called the Postmaster General's Office was responsible for the rollout of the telephone. The PMG was custodian of the local telephonic communications, with another government organisation called the OTC, or Overseas Telecommunications Corporation, picking up internationally where the PMG left off. The PMG became Telecom Australia in 1975, which was still a 100% government-owned entity. 20 years later, it changed its name again, this time to its international trading name of Telstra. The OTC somehow became Optus, and here we are today. Our telecommunications is all but privatised, and shareholder returns seem to be more important than the nation's ability to technically keep up with the rest of the world. And we seem to be eternally embroiled in a melee between government, regulators and telcos when it comes to the next and possibly the most important revolution of this century. It seems like kindergarten behaviour at times, and it would be laughable if it wasn't so serious. Some of the headlines in the past week include: the government backpedals on broadband guarantee, Telstra wants Optus back in court, Labor confident on fibre, new group is end of G9, claims Telstra, and telcos plead to Coonan on fibre to the node. If nothing else, these headlines are indicative of the volatility of the current situation. And to make matters worse, we, the consumer, are inundated with so much information, some of which is true and accurate, and some which is purely scaremongering, that we've all become so apathetic that we're beginning to lose interest. Just this week, the new consortium of 11 ISPs called T4 launched a website called Tell the Truth Telstra to counter some of what it calls myths published on Telstra's Now We Are Talking website. So as consumers, who do we believe? Unless you have a thorough understanding of how this technology works, it really comes down to programs like this one, Tech Talk Radio, and passionate, dedicated journalists like Adam Turner, who write articles for publication in the mainstream media to help us try and make sense of what's really true and correct and see the spin and myths for what they really are. The bad news? Well, we're at least 7 months away from a federal election, of which the issue of broadband is sure to become a major issue. But the good news, Adam Turner joins the panel today to openly discuss the dilemmas that have currently cost Australia anywhere between $10 and $30 billion in recent years.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Apple delays the Leopard launch. Profits are down and sales are up as the digital music market holds promise for the future. Telstra says the formation of a new group of 11 internet service providers is a sign that the so-called G9 has fallen apart. And Google moves to attract developers. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the IT world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, MySpace party leaves parents with a $48,000 damage bill, Sony talks up its next-gen organic LED televisions, Apple confirms iPhone launch date, the US now heads international spam hall of shame, and two-thirds of British web surfers waste 2 workdays a month surfing aimlessly. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In Britain this week, a party advertised by a teenage girl on the social networking site MySpace has left parents with a $48,000 cleanup bill. The party attracted hundreds of uninvited revellers who destroyed the family home in Woodstone Village, County Durham, Northern England. 17-year-old Rachel Bell advertised her party on MySpace after seeing a British television series about promiscuity and drug taking amongst teenagers. And while only 30 or 40 well-wishers were expected, more than 200 people invaded the house. Susan McLean from Victoria Police spoke to Tech Talk Radio in November last year about the importance of playing an active role in supervising children online and educating children about online dangers from an early age.
I think parents need to start from the time that their child is first using the internet. And in a lot of households, we're talking 3, 4, and 5. It's not a standalone issue. It needs to be part of all the dialogue that you are going to engage with your child all through their life. So it's no use thinking at 17 or 18, gee, I think I should talk to them about internet safety. If you're having a computer in your house, you need to teach them internet safety.
Sony said on Thursday last week that it planned to start selling ultra-thin televisions in Australia using cutting-edge organic light-emitting diode technology later this year. In a press release over 2 years ago, Sony announced that it would commence mass production of a full-colour organic light-emitting diode, or OLED, display, the first intended for implementation in a personal entertainment handheld for the Japanese market. Other companies are also investing in OLED technology, such as the Seiko Epson Corporation, Canon and Samsung. OLED displays produce bright, colourful images without the need for a backlight like LCDs, and this ultimately allows for a much thinner panel. The OLED TV, destined for an Australian launch this year, will be manufactured by a joint venture between Sony and Toyota Industries. The news comes as market researcher NPD Group announced last week that consumers are turning off plasma televisions in droves, reporting sales of plasma in Australia dropping 36% in February this year. Smart House News has announced that Apple's new iPhone will be launched in Australia in the second quarter of 2008. According to an insider at Telstra, the carrier could resell the phone using their GSM Edge wireless technology. While the US version of the phone will go on sale in June this year, Smart House News reported that a spokesperson for Apple Australia was unavailable to comment on the proposed launch locally. Additionally, there was still no indication as to whether or not an iPhone using 3G mobile technology would be made available to the Australian market. In just 6 months since Tech Talk Radio spoke with the Australian Communications Authority about unsolicited email or spam, the United States now has the dubious honour of leading the world in unsolicited mail output. Boston-based IT security firm Sophos has published its latest report on the top 12 spam-relaying countries over the first quarter of 2007. Sophos found that the US relayed considerably more spam than other nations, with just under a fifth of the world's spam originating from US-based computers. A senior security consultant at Sophos said that the US stands out like a sore thumb in this dirty dozen, and that China, which until recently was an intimate rival to the US, dropped dramatically during the last quarter. Bruce Matthews, manager of the Australian Communication Authority's anti-spam team, spoke with Tech Talk Radio late last year about the state of spam in Australia.
In terms of the volume of spam, the three main spamming countries in order are the United States, China and South Korea. Spam is increasingly involved with criminal elements and it's becoming much more professional. In the early days with spam, I think there were a lot of people that just were experimenting in ways to disseminate information. But now, increasingly, spam has a criminal element. I'm talking about the worst types of spam, which are phishing-type spam, and they're certainly more professional.
Mr. Matthews warned internet users never to click on links contained in suspect or unsolicited email messages. And a survey from Great Britain has found that 2 out of 3 web surfers lose significant amounts of time when web browsing takes them off tangent. YouGov, an online marketing research agency in the UK, found almost one quarter of browsers estimate they spend more than 30% of their time surfing aimlessly, which equates to 2 workdays per month. Jason Lloyd, broadband channel manager at Wales-based moneysupermarket.com, said that although people log on with a purpose, they're now being offered so much choice and online distraction that many forget what they're there for and spend hours aimlessly wilfing instead. Wilfing, an acronym derived from What Was I Looking For, is blamed on the ever-increasing number of shopping, gambling, sports news and adult content sites on the World Wide Web today. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
The United Nations copyright agency that arbitrates more than half the world's cyber squatting cases saw a 25% increase in complaints last year. So this is going to grow worldwide.
Google have been keeping a record of every search that you do. So they associate your search history with your Google login for whether it's Gmail, Calendar, whatever it is.
Optimize both your title tags and also your meta description tags. You don't want to have a keyword density, for instance, such that it just reads obnoxiously. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have a page where you have to scroll to the point where your hand gets sore on the mouse.
They've got to prop up the pay TV networks that spent far too much rolling out duplicate infrastructure. And if we do the same thing in broadband, we'll be in the same messed up state in 10, 20, 30 years' time.
Oh, well, I have to disagree. There's another company. He was saying the only option is for Telstra to do this, Telstra to do that. It's not, the ball's not in Telstra's court. What about G9? No. Where's G9's cable? G9's organisation that's been talking about things for ages?
The reason that digital television in Australia is crippled is because of that messed up rollout of pay TV cable years ago.
Now we digress a bit here. We've got a show to do and we're running over.
Let's go. He is a genius in the field of antivirus software.
It's my dream. It's my dream to have an internet Interpol.
The issue is if you've got people who are doing things in North Korea or China, there is no cooperation, there are no formal arrangements set up jurisdictionally, and it's an absolute nightmare.
If they don't invest more into the police investigations, we'll have more and more hackers and more criminals.
The fourth one was Bridget Moyen, something or other.
Like a hand setting and
crackle, crackle, crackle.
Dial tone, yep. Crackle, 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 crackle.
A bit of a shock.
As if it's a bit of a shock.
Yeah, something like that happened at our place, but we won't go into that. But what about the iPhone? What, the instant reactions of iPhones, briefly?
Well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step 1. Download and install some podcatching software, like iTunes. Step 2. Find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step 3. Copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software. And you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car. Christine.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And we're back again for another week of Tech Talk Radio. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron, well, what can I say? Graham, you know him better than I do these days.
He's missing again, isn't he?
Missing in action, cruising the streets, pounding the pavement, probably under a bench somewhere. Last time we heard him, he was in the pub somewhere, I think, having a drink with a colleague. So.
I think he's working hard tonight, just quietly.
Anyway, Dr. Ron, we won't miss you. We've got someone here who's better. ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you Adam Turner, who writes a whole sort of interesting things from Next, IT Wire, Icon, APC. There's a lot of logos on your website. Good evening, Adam. How are you, mate?
I'm great. Thanks.
Thank you very much for spending the time and coming in and having a chat to us on the radio program and replacing the good doctor this evening. So,
no one could replace the good doctor.
Well, he was away for 3 weeks and we forgot him in the promo, I think, didn't we, Graham?
We did eventually, yeah.
Anyway, a lot of interesting tidbits have been happening again this week, as per normal in this wonderful industry in which we work. Broadband to the forefront again, and I think we're going to have a lot of this sort of cajoling leading up into the next election, which is still you know, as I said in the interesting in the opener there, a good interesting 7 months away, because there'll be a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, especially with the politicians, because there's a lot of politics to go underneath the water yet. But we'll save that for a segment just down the track. We're streaming again tonight. You can catch us on both the Windows Media Stream and also on the Showcast Stream. So just visit the webpage, techtalkradio.com.au. Click the little icon. There's a little icon logo thing on the screen there, and you'll see it. Listen here each night. So be sure not to turn your graphics off when you... when you're browsing the site. We've had a few interesting letters tonight too. I've already got into trouble once. In the opener there, I was on my soapbox, I guess, for want of a better term. I started writing and I couldn't stop on the weekend when I was talking about broadband. OTC, the Overseas Telecommunications. This is from Jeff. Thank you very much for your email today, Jeff. The Overseas Telecommunications Commission was established in August of 1946. It was responsible for foreign telecommunication services in Australia, and on the 1st of February 1992, it was merged with the Australian Telecommunications Corporation. Not Optus, but I think the reason why I thought it was Optus, because there's a satellite place just down the road here that used to be OTC, and it became Optus. And talking to a couple of colleagues who were allegedly in the know, they said, oh, yeah, it all went across there. So there you go. Thank you, Jeff, for sending that in. But actually, we did actually have a chat to another friend of mine on air who's involved in historical restoration of telephone equipment and communications over the years, based down the road at the local telephone exchange, would you believe? And they're passionate about what they do. So we're going to get them in the next few weeks. And
I'll be looking forward to that one.
Chat about that too. Yeah. So, all right. Did you get a juiced thing? Are you a subscriber to Juiced? Either you guys?
I'm not.
I'm not a subscriber, aren't you? No.
Okay. Juiced is one of these new things which is going to replace... It's from the guys who did Skype over in wherever they are in Europe.
Yeah.
Now, Juiced is going to... Allegedly, it's TV on demand for your broadband.
Ah, right.
Okay. Interesting concept. And the beta version came out. I registered to be a beta version. I think Lid did too in Palo Alto. Hi, Lid, if you're listening to us over there live, you should be asleep if you are. she emails us as strange hours of the night. Also, Dr. Ron was on the beta list too. But so far today, I've tried at work with the beta version. I've tried at home. Dr. Ron has tried, and no one that I know of has been able to get Juiced to work. So if you have out there, you've had a little bit of success with the Juiced beta, I'd be interested to hear what you say, especially because they requested really good quality video of about 6 megabits per second is what you've got to submit to them. So how it's going to come over on broadband, I don't know. So
not many people with 6 megabit connections here.
No, not that I know of. I've got ADSL 2.
You'd scrape it on your ADSL 2.
I downloaded 11 meg in about a minute today. That was pretty good. What do you reckon? Is that what you get?
11 meg in about a minute? That's pretty fast.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just over a meg per second or something like that. But that's
pretty good.
That was local. I couldn't get it from overseas. You're still stuck behind.
How far do you get with your Juiced before it fails? What point does it fall over at?
An unexplained error has occurred.
Oh, I hate those.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them going around, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. And even at home, because I'm behind a server and a proxy,
there's a trolley full of them in the latest Mac ad. Have you seen that?
Well, don't talk to me about Macs. Speaking of Macs, actually.
I will talk to you about Macs.
Happy birthday to Mac. Happy birthday to Mac.
Oh, really?
Today.
Yeah.
And we're going to air on Monday, so you might be listening to us and around the place. 30 years today, exactly today, two guys, Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs.
Yep.
You probably know those names. They set up a little stall in San Francisco and sold their first Apple II. Not bad, huh? 30 years today. And
Come a long way.
Look what they've done now.
They've gone completely out of the computer business, and they're now in the music portable player industry.
They have. I have a colleague at work who's gone through four.
Own the industry?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. They make some great TV ads too.
They're not bad. I have a colleague at work who has gone through his fourth notebook in as many weeks from Mac.
Oh, with the Intel Macs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear bad things about them.
Do you? What have you heard?
I hear that they fail a lot.
Yes, they do. Well, poor old Jace, he's gone through four now. I was actually going to do a bit of a chat with him, but even to the point where the screen failed on him, it just went all fuzzy and fell over, and there was a point where he couldn't play a DVD in one of the machines that just wouldn't even... And in our industry,
it's so un-Mac-like to have so many problems, isn't it?
Has Apple recognized the problem yet, though? That's the problem with Apple, is when these things happen, they go la, 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 and pretend nothing's happening for a while until enough people complain.
Well, they live behind a post office box somewhere in Sydney. That's about the best that anyone's ever... Well, that I know.
Yes, all their servicing is outsourced. It's all done by third-party service
companies.
Even
their warranties. You've got to get it back to them within 14 days for a replacement. Otherwise, it's your problem, buddy.
14 days of the problem or 14 days of buying it?
14 days from buying it.
is for
DOA replacement.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which I thought was a bit rough. So, and then if you're relying on it for business, which most people do with their notebooks, like we're sitting here tonight with two on the table, you need it desperately. So, but anyway, 30 years ago, they actually started off with a pretty good idea and they've done exceptionally well for themselves. So much so that Steve Wozniak, I read his book over Christmas. Fantastic read if anyone's looking for a bit of a read about how he did it all. Didn't talk much about the current political scenarios. It more talked about what they did, and he was a real lout.
The historical side of it.
Steve was quite passionate about what he did, and it came through in the book. So if you're looking for a good read, well worth it. Microsoft have had a few fixes that they've released. Graham, do you know? Like,
I had to install patches so that I could load my patches. It was really bad at one point. Did you have that problem?
I had. Would you believe my mum rang me up? She said, "My laptop's gone all funny.
Yeah,
my sound card's not working. Or what's going on?" I just hit the net and did a Google. I said, "Ah, here, load the patch for the patch."
Yeah,
and that'll fix your problem.
Now with the one I had was. It comes up and asks you, do you want to send an error report to Microsoft? I clicked send report and it came back with a link that took me to the fix. So with those Microsoft errors these days, at least the error reporting does actually sometimes come back with the right solution. So click send when it wants to send the error to Microsoft.
You must be the one guy that does that. I've never done that. I'll try it now.
Well, I never used to until we had the bloke from Microsoft in here explaining how it all worked in the background. And since then, I do that. And, you know, it doesn't always come up with the solution, but the times that it does, it'll save you hours of Googling.
All right, I remember that.
It does. And I must admit, I was the same way inclined. I used to never hit the feedback button.
Yeah.
And I've sort of since changed my ways a little bit now, and I do on the odd occasion said, yeah, I think you need to know why your Outlook's not working after it's come out of Hibernate.
That's
here,
right.
Cop this.
And when they come out with a fix, they attach it to that system, so you get a link back.
That's very good. That was good having Microsoft in to have a chat to that.
It was.
We'll see if we can get them back in this year. We haven't had them. They had three of the updates marked with Microsoft's highest threat rating. Plug holes in the Windows operating system. The vulnerabilities could be used by hackers to install malicious code on personal computers. So it's all along the same sort of lines. People just being able to get in and do stuff. In fact,
there's a really interesting one that sort of hijacked your cursor. You know those web pages that put special things on your cursor? So that your cursor's got a trail of snowflakes behind it or some such nonsense. There was a vulnerability that could use that mechanism to install stuff on your computer, and one of the patches was to fix that. So
isn't that the patch that needed to be patched?
Not sure which one it was.
No, the one that patched that fixed the patch was the audio one on the sound cards, a Realtek sound card, which is in a hell of a lot of machines.
Practically every all the motherboards that have got built-in sound use it, yeah.
Yeah, it came up and said, oh, there's a DLL's gone wayward and you have to reinstall it. And anyone who doesn't know much about the goings-on of a computer, just instant panic mode saying, the computer I've just bought's broken.
Yep. So, and rings their tech support guy, which is you.
Yeah, look, everyone likes ringing me. I don't know why. Yes. GD's just sent us an email. Thank you, GD. Is good, is all he says.
Oh, okay.
Must be listening to us on the stream.
Glad something's good.
Sent us an email to feedback@techtalkradio.com. Actually, no, he didn't. He sent it to onair@techtalkradio.com.au. Ah. That's the spam filter free version that we don't advertise
except on air.
If you're having a listen, feel free. You can ask any of us a question in here, Adam, Graham, or myself. Aria. Now, Graham, we've been down this line before about DRM, digital rights management, and all that sort of
ARIA
stuff.
ARIA are the record industry people in Australia.
They are indeed. Now, ARIA have made a fairly interesting announcement saying that profits are down and sales are up and the digital market holds promise for the future. And this goes in the face of all these people out there using LimeWire and downloading illegal songs.
And no one buys CDs anymore.
No, but EMI. And I found out what EMI stood for the other day, but don't ask me now. I found out on Spicks and Specs, would you believe
it? Yeah, that's right. I thought I knew that too. Yeah, I saw it on Spicks and Specs.
I said, oh, that's very good. Now I know what EMI stands for, but I've since forgotten. They've removed the copy protection, or they are talking about removing their digital rights management whole library, which is going to be sold through iTunes. Because as we sort of highlighted a couple of shows back, the United Nations have come down a little bit on the DRM industry, which would be Microsoft/Apple, and said, hey guys, we can all go out and buy records and CDs, not so much records, but CDs, and there's no copy protection on it, although Sony did try.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this on you know, 10% or 5% of the market. So that was a bit of a blow
for the
Apples. Well, actually, Steve Jobs has come out and gone all for this.
Now, I was ranting about this a couple of weeks ago on the show.
Oh, yes.
And I carry around a couple of pocket PCs or Windows Mobile or whatever it's called this week. And this means that I can now buy my music through iTunes, and for the first time, I can play it on my pocket PC. Is that right?
I don't know.
I hope so.
Only if it'll play those formats, though, because it's
AAC,
I think. So you still need software that will play that.
Oh, yeah, but if it's not got copy protection on it, I can convert from AAC uncopy protected to WMV or whatever my pocket PC likes.
I would assume so, yeah.
Here come the acronyms again. I love those acronyms.
It gets ugly very
quickly. WMA is the Windows media format that my pocket PC will like, and AAC is the Apple protected format. I can't remember what it stands for.
Because there is gear around that will play AAC.
Yes, then, yes, there
considering
is.
Considering most of it's got probably copyright protection on it anyway, what good is
And you can only play it on either iTunes or on your iPod and nothing else.
Which is the problem with Apple TV as well.
But EMI fixing it, which is really good. Yeah.
Sales, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, sales through the music store such as iTunes rose 1.5% of this is for buying and selling CDs of the market in 2005 and 5.5% last year to $27.8 million in revenue, according to The Australian. So that's not bad. And considering that there is a bit of a resurgence back in the CD sales, I think was also good. I must admit, the last thing I bought was a download. I bought an album off iTunes because I could. It was one of those things that was, you know, 10 o'clock in the evening. I thought, oh, I need some new music. I'll go shopping, and I did it. But apparently the CD sales are actually rising as well at the moment. Here
oh, that's
in,
good.
Here in
oh,
the good
I wonder whether that's because people are rebelling against copy protection or because they want the quality because, of course, a CD
I hope
is
it's
uncompressed.
The other. I hope it's the other because the quality is exceptionally noticeable.
I really hate it when you, especially when you've paid money for it and you download an MP3 file at 128 kilobits per second and it sounds grotty.
Yes.
Unless it's something you can't buy in the shops, I don't see why you'd want to buy it digitally. But even then, if you can't buy it in the shops, I bought
because
a CD.
Because you're Generation X, that's why.
But I bought a CD last night online for, it's a birthday present for someone, so I can't say because they might be listening. I bought a CD for someone last night online that I couldn't find in the shops, but there's no way I would have downloaded it because I want a physical copy. So I looked around until I found a place online that sold it. And if they didn't, I was going to get it off Amazon in the US. But at least I would have a disc. At least, as you say, the sound quality would be good. And something goes wrong, the disc is still there.
Mm. On the other hand, if you've got a crate of 400 CDs and they're in the next room or they're three doors down or something, it's often quicker with a broadband connection just to download it. You're going to have it faster than you're going to find it in your own collection.
That's when you get your terabyte network drive and you rip your crate of 400 CDs and then put them out in the back room and never have to touch them again.
Yeah, that is a good idea.
But then you've got the problem that they're MP3s, you know. Exactly.
And they sound grotty again.
Exactly right. Exactly. At least you won't wear the CD out. Not like the old records. on the other hand, there is always two sides to every coin. Reported on ABC the other night, music industry pushes ISPs for action on illegal downloads. Now, just cutting between the lines here, or reading between the lines, should I say, the Australian music industry has approached internet service providers to penalise people who illegally download music. Under the plan, record labels would identify internet customers who are allegedly downloading and service providers would give them warnings before cutting off their phone and internet connections. Ruthless?
Oh, well, if it happens, we'll see.
So watch out all you people using LimeWire and the things like that. I thought that was pretty draconian.
ISPs would never be able to sell a plan over about 3 or 4 gig a month if it wasn't to people that were downloading stuff. If you're a home user and you're going through 20 gig a month, don't tell me you're not using BitTorrent or LimeWire or something.
No, exactly right. I must admit,
you're probably using it to watch movies and television anyway, not downloading your music.
Well, that's where it's all going.
Yeah, television is video. Yeah.
So, and the other thing too is I'm a bit of a convert to Pandora, and that chews through the bandwidth, let me tell you. For those of you who don't know, that's
online radio
which you program. We spoke about that.
And it does sound really good, doesn't it?
The quality is excellent.
Yeah.
So, but well worth having a listen to in the office where I tend to listen to it during the daytime because it's not quite so distracting. You don't have voices in the middle of it. Apple delays Leopard, the operating system, the next operating system for the Apple computer.
Yes, having made such a big deal about the release of Vista and how long delayed it was.
Yeah.
Apple have now delayed their own operating system, although at least it's not nearly as long a delay as with XP.
They're talking months, not years.
That was a long time, wasn't it?
Vista was called Vista because you could see it so far in the distance for so long, and it never got any closer.
Well, someone was saying the other day there's already a replacement touted for Vista 2 for about 2 years down the track.
Yeah, no, there is. The replacement after that and the replacement after that as well.
They're good.
They're all named after ski resorts in Canada.
Are they?
You can hardly expect all the Microsoft Whistler developers. Or something.
Whistler. Actually, the story is, now I've got to try and get this right. There was Longhorn is the one now, and then I think there's Whistler. No.
Longhorn is the server version of Vista, isn't it?
Longhorn's the one in the middle. We've got Whistler now, and then we've got Blackcomb, which are two ski resorts in Canada. Longhorn is a bar between Whistler and Blackcomb. Now, so it's like a rest stop on the way.
Okay.
So Longhorn, the next one that's coming, is only actually meant to be a rest stop between this and the one after it.
I see.
So they must ski a lot because that's what they name everything after. But B, they don't even see Longhorn as a full version from their own naming system, which is why they changed it, I think, because people figured out what they were talking about.
Bill's going into space too. Did you read about that today?
I heard he was thinking about it. Has he decided now?
I don't know. It was in one of the Russian tabloids or something like that. Bill Gates is going to be the next. Well, he's got a few spare mil.
Well, if I had that much money, I'd be thinking about it too.
People have been taking him a collection to send him. I think it's the re-entry that they're trying to avoid.
Oh, goodness me. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is not with us this evening, but I think we've got just an equal talented person sitting here in Adam Turner, who's an IT journalist, and Graham is in this evening too, IT guru as well. Have you had any dilemmas at work this week, just apart from all the rest
of it? No, not at all.
Well, that's got to be a good week for...
I've been on leave.
Oh, look, even better. After the break, when we come back in just a few moments, we're going to start talking all about the broadband debacle.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Next week on Tech Talk Radio, we take a look at some of the new emerging online threats.
A bank robber makes off on average about $4,700 and spends an average of 83 months in jail when convicted. An average bank embezzler makes off with $42,000. An average embezzler spends 5 months in prison, so that's a much better risk-reward trade-off. And when you look online, the average victim is out $4,800, and you have massive economies of scale where you're able to attack literally millions of people at once.
That's next week on Australia's premier independent tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to talk about one of our favourite things this week, broadband, because it's so topical and so in the news again. And here we go. It starts off this week with Labor confident on the fibre network, which I thought was quite interesting too. Labor expects its plan to build a fibre to the node network reaching 98% of the population will beat any development by the Coalition and Telstra. Now, this is just political rant, I would have thought. Like, we've heard of Rudd's little thing where he was going to get his money out of the future fund and get out there and do it, but we've also had a whole heap of other things that have finally kicked in this week too. The new T4, which is... the G9 less Optus. Now, why did Optus... There you go, Adam. There's a question for you. Why do you think Optus bailed on the G9? Well, the G9's still in existence, though, isn't it?
I don't think they bailed on the G9. They've bailed... It looks like they've bailed on this. I couldn't say exactly why, but quite often when something like that happens, it's because they know something we don't. Maybe they're in on something. Maybe they know what's coming up next. I don't know. But it would be a strategic move. It wouldn't be, we forgot to return the email and say, yeah, count us in. It would have to be a strategic move. I'm giving them a bit of credit there, but it would have to be. But what, with Rudd's plan for 12, Michael Sainsbury, who writes for The Australian, had an article a couple of weeks ago about how that Telstra had revealed the details about what they want to do. And they're talking about using a faster form of DSL for the last mile. So where Rudd's talking about getting 12 megabits per second to people, what Telstra's talking about is more like 50 maybe megabits per second to people. Mm. Rudd's idea, I like it financially. I like the idea of not having it owned by Telstra, using half government money and then getting the telcos to kick in the rest so Telstra doesn't have the country anymore and can sort of dictate terms. But if you're going to do all that and still only give us 12 megabits per second, if they switch on ADSL2 everywhere, 80% of people would have 12 megabits per second today. So they've got to be setting the bar higher than that. And at least Telstra wants to offer, it looks like they want to offer a lot more, but I don't want a lot more if it comes under the conditions that Telstra then owns the network and we have the same problems that we've got now where Telstra says this is how it is. my way or the highway.
Well, I think you've got to look back at the issues that are at hand here. And I think what I tried to do in the opening of the show was equate what we're about to do with broadband to the initial rollout of the telephone network in the country. You know, when we used to have Telstra, when it was a government-owned body completely, and they made the decisions about how it was going to happen, and the money that was made from that was put back into developing the network and things like that. But this time round, we very much have a privatised environment where the shareholders' back pockets are primarily in the interest, and government seems to be taking a "it'll be all right, she'll be right, these guys will do it properly." But yet, if we stuff this up, which is potentially on the cards, it's going to affect us. Like, it might be costing us $10 or $30 billion every other year now in respect to lost revenue and things like that, what's costing business.
Mm.
What's it going to cost in the future when everybody else is running 100 megabits and we've got 12?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think, there's a lot to look at here, and there's a lot at stake too. So we've got an election coming up, and you look at the pressures on the election, they think short term. They only think in 3 or 4 year terms. And but yet the rest of the country, we've got to live with this for quite some time. And of course, at lunch today, I was having a lunch with a colleague, and he was asking me questions about NextG and how well it was going to work out in the country. And as you've said, Graham, before, NextG or the wireless broadband is not the complete answer to the city environment. We need a fixed fibre to the node environment here, and this is what we're talking about.
And a very good wireless solution like NextG to fill in the gaps where the cables won't run.
Yes. So Labor's plan is up and running, but I haven't sort of seen too much about it apart from what I've read in the news. But that was last month when Kevin Rudd decided to announce that $8 billion national broadband network, of which he was going to get 2.7 from the Future Fund, which is the Polly's. Well, as I said then, I thought, well, this is our future, really, isn't it? If they spend a few bucks and do it properly, but we've got to look for capacity. It's going to have to stand the test of time.
The money, a big chunk of the money, came from the sale of Telstra anyway.
Yep, exactly. Mm.
And they're going to invest it somewhere
else. They sold that publicly owned infrastructure to a privately owned company, and then they're going to use the revenue to build more publicly owned infrastructure. So that kind of makes sense in the end result.
Which is probably why people don't like it.
But having a privately owned company have a monopoly over that last bit of cable running between the phone exchanges and the homes and the businesses is the big question, and that's the big difference between Labor's plan and the current government's plan.
Well, they made a mistake when they privatised Telstra. They should have broken it in half.
They should have said. Kept the infrastructure.
Yeah, here's the infrastructure that still belongs to us or that belongs to a separate company, and here's Telstra that's now a telco competing on separate terms with everyone else.
Yeah.
Now, that wouldn't have been... they got a higher share price for it when they sold it in one piece, which was probably their primary concern. The thing is now that because they've done that and Telstra owns the copper, we're at Telstra's... or the network, we're at Telstra's mercy. Now, what we're talking about now is probably a once-in-a-generation opportunity to change that to build something like what Rudd's talking about, where it's not one company has it and dictates the terms. It's there for everyone to use. If we screw this up, if, you know, Coonan caves in and lets Telstra do what they want on their terms, and Telstra owns the next generation of infrastructure and has the same dominance over it as what it does now, for the next 30 years, we're going to be at Telstra's mercy again, and we're going to be behind the way we are now. Nothing will change unless we break that grip of one company on the whole box and dice.
I agree. There's a natural monopoly. There has to be a monopoly on that bit of cable that runs into the house.
Mm.
You're duplicating that infrastructure like they did in pay TV, and we're now paying the price for, with digital TV not being so crippled in this country. Mm. Breaking that monopoly or having it in government hands so that it can be controlled for the benefit of the country rather than the benefit of shareholders is critical to the way forward.
Hmm.
Telstra used to have an organisation or a division called the NDC, Network Design and Construction.
Yes.
They used to have little cars running around the place which had NDC written on it. I haven't seen one of those for years. I think they've just disappeared. They're not doing any network design and construction anymore, are they?
Maybe they were the maintenance guys.
I think so. But even still, speaking from a colleague's experience, where they used to have a lot of, you know, densely populated maintenance guys fixing a lot of problems, all these guys are doing, and they've got such a good skill set in telecommunications, they're just out there being couriers now. They drive out, swap a board, and drive to the next place, and swap a board, and that's basically it, and it's all computer dispatched. Anyway, Optus and eight other telcos have told Communications Minister Helen Coonan that they can deliver a fibre optic network in capital cities at a wholesale price of between $21 and $24 a month if she does not give in to Telstra on changes of regulation. That's a gutsy call this far out. They must have done some fairly interesting business models, I would have thought, to come to that sort of conclusion. Whose cable are they going to use? Are they going to run their own?
Well, I haven't read the details of the proposal, but yeah, with the names that are involved, you could assume they've done their homework.
Mark's always said, you know, G9, put it down on the table and see what it's all about. The G9 pitch to Senator Coonan comes amid increasing concerns that the government might be about to yield to the biggest telco for Telstra to actually roll out this new broadband fibre to the node network. Now, our good friend Phil Burgess has been a bit quiet in the last couple of weeks, but I'm sure you've probably got along really well with Phil Burgess.
Oh, yeah, Phil loves me. Yeah. I'm on his Christmas card list.
But Phil's been notoriously quiet in the last couple of weeks, so I'm sure they'll let him out again when they want a bit more of attention. But in a separate plea for the government to hold the line, 11 telcos and internet service providers issued a warning about the future of competition. Now, this leads on to our next thing. If you've been to the Tech Talk Radio website, you probably noticed there's a new T4 logo that sits on there. This is directly in competition, I guess, or to try and rebuke a lot of the claims that Telstra is making. And it's called T4 Tell the Truth and Telstra's Top Myths Exposed. Now, this only came out, I think, this week. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was drawn to my attention this week. I don't know whether these guys have been around for a while.
I think it's fairly new.
Yeah, this is, and it's a pretty, well, there's not too much on the website yet, so I suspect it's only just relatively new. But this is 11 ISPs have got together to try.
Including a couple of the biggies.
Yep, excluding Optus.
Yeah.
And of course, Telstra have spun it beautifully, as Telstra do, saying, oh, that's the end of the G9, they're falling apart already.
Divide and conquer. It's a very old ploy, and conquer.
I'm really surprised Phil hasn't been out to tell us about these things already. But so this new website's out there, T4 Tell the Truth. Now, once again, speculation, cynicism, all these sort of things come through. Like, if you're not technically savvy, what do you believe? Like, there's, you know, these guys say on one hand and those guys say on the other hand. What do you believe these days? Do you think there's too much out there, too much spin going on?
There's certainly...
A bit of politics into it for good measure?
There's certainly a healthy dose of spin on both sides of the argument. As usual, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. We try to get to the bottom of it when we can on the show here.
It does. I think the thing that really irks in the back of my mind is that we've had grabs from Graeme Samuel, who's the ACCC boss, sort of saying, look, Telstra have been invited to put their cards on the table and tell us what they're going to do. And they're even prepared to table the, what do they call it? I can't think of the exact legal term that they call it, but they can get an exemption to remove themselves from, I guess, government regulation by saying this is what we plan to do. If everyone says yep and they don't agree to it, and no one disagrees to it, you can actually get away with it and do it. It's been tabled. But Telstra won't even come to the table and do that. And, of course, we've got these guys here, T4, Tell the Truth, the G11, if you want to call them that.
Part of the danger is, though, that what people have been saying about T4 and also with Labor's plan is it actually puts pressure on Coonan to come up with an answer. Because when you look at it, she's been talking about it for a long time, but doesn't seem to be getting anywhere and keeps insisting, oh, yeah, we've nearly got a solution, but nothing happens. All this stuff comes out and puts more pressure on her to come up with a solution. The easiest solution for her is to give in to Telstra and give them whatever the hell they want. So all this pressure, whilst trying to call for something different, could actually backfire because it could back Coonan into a corner where the only way she can get out and save face and look good is to say, yeah, we're building it tomorrow and Telstra's going to build it and Telstra's going to own it. Hooray, I've solved the problem. But you've solved the problem today, but not in the long term.
Did you catch her on Barry Cassidy's Insiders, the business show on the ABC a couple of Sundays ago? She did a 10-minute thing with
Barry. I've seen her on Late Line a couple of times.
Barry caught her. I don't know whether it was a Sunday morning thing and she just got out of bed or something like that, but she was just one of the... She was sitting there playing with the jewellery all the way through the interview. Like, Barry would ask a question and
maybe
she,
they were worry beads.
They could well have been, actually, but she's sitting there and, it just inspired confidence about the fact that she didn't know what she was talking about. Mm. And, of course, as soon as she got out of... Well, I think she's a bit over-adept, and when people ask her questions off the cuff and she doesn't have her mind is there or the techie guys advising her, if she has some, I'm just... jumping to conclusions here. She just seemed to be a bit out of or over a depth and out of control with the situation. So
one night on Late Line, she had the nerve to call herself a friend of the consumer. It's lucky that I don't keep guns in the house or I'd need a new television. I couldn't believe she had the nerve to call herself a friend of the consumer. I think she was talking about digital television or something.
I think so. Now, just speaking of digital television, I know we digress because you mentioned this earlier, Graham, too. Imagine if the government had basically decided to stick with their planned rollout for digital TV. 2000, they announced it. 2008, we're going to turn off the set-top box. Well, here we are, 2008. It's now gone to 2012. Do you think, in the interest of maybe making the country progress, because the data casters want the old analog channels so that they can do the special things that data casters do, so they're being held back because we're still in the digital TV dilemma of no one's got a set-top box.
Because there's no reason to get one. Because
why should I get one? Because data casters aren't allowed to do anything interesting anyway.
In the UK, people are running out to get set-top boxes. They can't get them quick enough. Because they get all the extra channels, which we could have here. You get your set-top box and you get four different Channel 7s all with the same program on. What's the point of that?
That could change this year because they've been restricted. They haven't been allowed to do that except for ABC 2 and SBS World News.
And ABC 2 aren't allowed to show any entertaining programs.
That has changed this year. As of, I think, the 1st of January, they lifted the genre restrictions on ABC 2, which is why they're now showing things like old movies and stuff late at night that they just weren't allowed to before. Now, also this year, they've lifted the restrictions on multi-channeling, which is using your second channel as something different for the commercial stations. So, in theory, 7, 9, and 10 are now allowed to have 7, 2, 9, 10, and 10, 2. Hang on, I got that all right.
I think we know what you mean.
They're allowed an extra channel.
One extra channel where they could have four.
Yeah, but the thing is that extra channel has to be in high definition.
Right.
So I've been talking to them all in the last week because I've been writing a big story on digital television for Livewire and The Age. And none of them want to go on the record talking about this second channel because they're all umming and ahhing and not sure quite what to do about it.
If it has to be high def, then they're going to want to run the high def program the same as their standard def program so that standard def people aren't missing out.
That's what I was about to say, is that there isn't the bandwidth there for them to create yet another high definition channel.
So they can run two different programs.
What they'll probably do is when their standard definition program channel is showing something that's available in high definition, we'll say like CSI, which is in high definition, they'll show it in standard definition on the standard definition channel, and they'll show
that's the regular channel that everybody watches now, whether it's analog or digital.
That's the phrase I'm looking for, thank you. And then on the high definition channel, you'll see it as well. But then if on the regular channel they're showing, you know, MASH or something like that, that's clearly not in high definition, then at that time they will show something different on the high definition channel that is in high definition. So that way they don't have to create
like
a nice picture
of a lake with swans on it or something.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly. That loop that goes around. So what you will actually have is you won't have two channels. You'll have a channel and a half.
You'll have
the channel we already have that sometimes is showing the same thing on the high definition channel, but when there's nothing high definition available.
And they'll merge for the major programs and the major movies.
Prime time, when most things are in high definition anyway, they'll be in sync again and they'll show the same things. But then when there's nothing when what's on the normal television is not in high definition, they'll show something else.
And the third and the fourth channel that they could possibly have by that technology?
Well, but see, that's the thing. They can't do it now because all these multi-channels.
Because they're not allowed to.
No, they're only allowed to have one multi-channel and it has to be in high definition. But in 2009.
So even though they're opening up a little bit further, it's still crippled.
Yes. And in 2009, they're allowed to do standard definition multi-channeling. But the problem is if they start a high definition multi-channel now, it chews up some of their bandwidth. And then they'd have to get rid of that maybe. They're sort of juggling around and saying, all right, we're going to have a high definition channel which chews up four standard definition channels. So do we want to dedicate all that to one channel or do we want to wait 2 years and then be able to give people four extra channels with all this stuff on it? And so they're still trying to figure out
how to do it. And no high definition at all.
Yeah, and no high definition at all. So they're still all sitting there, and that's why they're all happy to talk to me off the record, but none of them wanted to be quoted in the paper because they're still putting the pieces together and trying to figure out the best way to do it. But I'll just say the one interesting thing is just because these stations are in high definition doesn't mean you need a high definition television to watch them. It just means you need a high definition
receiver.
Because converting downwards is easy. If you've got a high definition receiver, then even if you've got a normal television, when you look at the high definition channel, it will convert it down so your normal television can watch it.
And it may not look high definition anymore,
but you'll still be able to see it though. That's the main thing. You'll still be able to see these extra channels.
It just won't
look as good as it could. But if you've only got a standard definition set-top box or you've bought a television with only a standard definition tuner in it, you will not be able to watch these new high-definition channels. So that is going to start pushing the take-up of digital and high-definition this year because you will have to have at least a high-definition box or suddenly there will be something that you can't see. Even though there'll be no new content on these second channels. It'll only be repeats. It'll be like those Foxtel channels where they have another channel that shows all the same stuff but half an hour out.
Yep.
So it won't be that new, but it'll still be something. And I think it'll irk people to know there's a channel there they can't see. Where, as you say, at the moment, there's nothing
there's
on
no
digital
incentive
television.
To go there.
That's
there's
right.
no incentive at
yep.
all.
Yeah.
When they first started digital television, Channel 9 had all these different angles for the cricket and stuff like that. It was really interesting. You could see stump cam on this channel.
Yep.
They did that for a year or two and then went, oh, well, no one cares. And they
yeah,
turned
because
it off.
No one was watching it, yeah.
Nine have even disabled all back. Those channels now because nobody watches them.
It's interesting, the Channel 9 and perspective on the multi-video, multi-channel thing. They didn't call it Channel 1 or Channel 2. They had an MPV or whatever they used to call it. And that was because of the Foxtel relationship. This is one of the things that irks me, as you were saying before, Graham. The reason why our free-to-air choice in this country is pretty ordinary is because we had to protect Foxtel and yep. Optus Vision and those sort of guys. And this is what it all stems from, bad regulation back in those days.
Because they messed up the rollout of the actual cables to the houses, yeah, which is what we're talking about in broadband earlier on.
The then government, which is still our current government, decided that they were going to give a five-year amnesty to the free-to-air guys so that they couldn't compete with multiple channels. And we still have that sort of legacy with us today. Mm. So, and Foxtel, I think only this year, or would have been last year, turned a profit for the first time in however many years that they've been going. But some of the other terms...
A profit under protection.
Yes, yes. Some of the terms that we mentioned, their bandwidth. This is one of the key things that we were speaking about before with mobile phone technology, internet. Bandwidth is a very limited commodity. We can't make any more. We have certain frequencies and we use them. And the joys of digital is that we can now crunch and stuff. And it's a bit like zipping up a file in a lot of respects. We zip it up and we send it out in real time and we add water and it expands at the other end. But we can still only get so much in there without starting to see picture degradation and sound, you know, quality falling off and all that sort of stuff too. So,
which you do see on the Foxtel digital channels too, don't you?
I've never been a fan of Foxtel, and I don't have Foxtel because I think the quality is atrocious.
The quality of some of the digital encoding is that they've crunched too much into such a small space, and you can see the, you know, what should be a dark background has got, you know, shades of grey lines through it.
Oh, exactly.
It's really disturbing to watch sometimes.
I know people who've got Optus Pay TV, and I find it unwatchable. I don't have the heart to say anything to them, but I find it unwatchable for that.
If you were going to watch a movie, why wouldn't you go down to the DVD library and buy? You can download them off online of better quality than you watch on Foxtel or Optus, but hey, that's for another story, and we are running over.
All right.
What was I going to say? I had a great thought there, and it's just zipped my mind.
Oh, don't you hate when that happens? Oh, Never mind.
Anyway, we're going to take a little break, and we'll come back in just a moment, and we've obviously found what Adam's very passionate about, and we're going to talk about that in items 31 and 32 on the rundown. We'll get there very shortly, but we're just going to come back shortly, and we're just going to wrap up with Coonan backpedaling on the broadband guarantee. What a surprise.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
poor car visiting the relatives, child, washing the child car. Pressing.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm chatting about things in the studio other than what's on the air. We're talking about DNS servers. We had a promo that just went to air just then about how people can certainly change what you look at without you even noticing it. We're actually going to talk about that next week. The AAS from the United States had a bit of a seminar on just recently, and some of the audio grabs which you've heard tonight are from that, and we'll talk more about that next week. Senator Coonan backpedaled on broadband. There used to be this thing called the broadband guarantee. I don't know whether you guys are familiar with it. I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
Basically, it's the government said they'd, you know, fund them and help them out, and what's happened?
This is to provide public funding to get broadband into areas that haven't got it.
The
like
rural
in the,
side
in the
of
rural
things.
Side, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm
like
I'm
our
still...
friends in Cairns and then that area.
That's right. Cairns have got good broadband up there. They had it before but we
I,
did
I
down
think
here.
They got it early through this scheme, didn't they?
There are a couple of places who got it early.
More than likely, but I think it's good that some of the rural areas do sort of get to experience these things before us, where we sort of take everything for granted down here. But the Coonan, they had this broadband guarantee thing, which a lot of the ISPs were being funded, you know, encouraged to put the technology into telephone exchanges, and the government would chip in and help out. But all of a sudden it dried up, as a bit like the rain here in town at the moment. But and as a result, they've decided that we'll change the scheme, as the federal government does. A bit like superannuation, really, isn't it?
Yep.
And the rules changed and everyone got cold feet and said, no, that's not quite right. So basically Senator Coonan has decided to reverse some of the changes that the subsidy was removed by changing from the broadband guarantee scheme across. So I guess rural ISPs that had invested in the infrastructure will be able to backdate claims. So all these claims, they can now come back and sort of hopefully get a bit of extra money out of the government, because it is a bit unfair, really, when you think you're rolling out this infrastructure and they pull the wire.
And suddenly they changed the rules. Some of them just stopped dead, though, didn't they? Was it, I think you were saying Internode, when they said there's no money, they just said, right, they threw their hands up that very day and said, we're not doing another thing.
That's exactly right. Internode just walked away and said, hey, whoa, stop. You know, everyone, lunch, tools down, off you go. And for that very reason, because they just didn't know where to go, because the rules were changing.
I hope this gets things moving again.
Well, one can only hope, I guess. But once again, I think we've got these pressures. It's sort of like, it's not really technological pressures, it's more political pressures that are starting to come in now with the ramping up of the election campaign. So, I don't know. I just hope that we don't end up going down the wrong path, because it was a good idea at the time and someone believed what somebody said, which is always on the cards with government type sort of things. We digress. All right, so that's the broadband scenario. Adam, just briefly from your experiences, I know you've written a few comments. What do you think is going to happen in the next leading up to the election? Do you think it's going to get more political, or do you think we're going to start seeing some...
Well, I think what Coonan was hoping for is when they came out with their broadband strategy a little while ago, that would basically sweep it under the carpet. That would shut people up and you wouldn't hear about it till after the election. And then Labor came out with their plan, and suddenly Coonan had to respond. And so that's why the whole thing's blown up. What Labor did is really put it back on the table, back on the front page, at least the front page of the IT section. You know, we've got to do something about this. So they are going to and fro, and they are going to promise all kinds of things. The way Howard keeps saying things like, oh, wait and see how it pans out, wait and see how it pans out. And Coonan keeps saying, oh, there's something just around the corner. They're smart politicians. Even if they got no idea about technology, they're good politicians. So I suspect they've got something up their sleeve. But what I'm worried about they've got up their sleeve is they're going to pull something out and say, look, we've got a new fiber to the network. It's going to be built. And that'll be the headline. And then everyone will go, oh, fantastic, the problem's solved. And only people like us who read the next few paragraphs down and say, we'll be built, owned, maintained, and controlled and dominated by Telstra forever. And, okay, this is not actually a good thing. You may have solved the broadband drought in the short term. You may have brought a little bit of rain, but you're ensuring that we're forever relying on Telstra for the rain. But I think that's what they'll do, is they'll pull something out of the bag, and the headline will just be, we're getting a fibre network, and that they will just hope that that will be enough. And only people like us who read it and will know it's not right, but there's not enough votes amongst people like us, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think Conroy, who's the opposition spokesperson down here for telecommunications, I even think a lot of those guys are a bit out of their depth when they come to being asked questions by the mainstream media too, which is as you say, it just leaves you with that uncertainty. You know, you see Coonan on air, you know, Barry Cassidy feeling very nervous about things, and you see it's all becoming very political. It's all getting mixed up with water and things like that. Yeah. So, come on November, I don't think it can come soon enough. But unfortunately, I think we're probably going to get a decision based on November, I really think so.
But I think the government wants to sweep it out of the way as soon as possible, and they're hoping that bigger things like water and stuff like that will come along, and they'll be able to sweep broadband.
But how can they sweep it away? It's the biggest thing. We've got to do it right.
It's the biggest thing to us. I don't want to call you guys names, but I'm a nerd, right? There are other nerds out there. To us nerds, this is one of the biggest things around. But we're a minority. Other people don't care. I like to think that this is a tier one issue. It's not a tier one issue. And the big tier one issues are going to come up. Things like Medicare, things like water, things like health. And this is just going to get swept under the carpet.
I think, yeah, I sort of agree with you, but I also, on the other hand, think that, you know, it's like telecommunications. We're big adopters of technology. The Gen Xers live, eat and breathe on SMSs and mobile technology and internet and things like that these days. If they, I don't know, maybe they've got the clout behind it. Maybe they don't care.
But
maybe
they don't
they're apathetic.
Care. All they know is that their phone works, and that's all they care about. They don't care about who owns it. They don't even care necessarily how much it costs. You look at the ridiculous amount people pay for their phone bills. All they care about is that they can SMS their friend and get a reply. And whatever is done, you'll still be able to do that. So they don't care.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk something passionate about television, which we've already sort of started. We're going to have a little bit of a chat about Ice TV. If you haven't heard of that, you'll find out about that very shortly. And get the crystal ball out and take a look at what's in store. We've already given you a bit of an insight into that.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Next week on Tech Talk Radio, we take a look at some of the new emerging online threats.
It turns out that with this attack that we discovered this past week, an attacker can change the setting on your home broadband router. So instead of using your internet service provider's telephone directory, so to speak, to connect to a website, you'll use the rogue attacker's telephone directory. So now next time you type in www.bank.com, you're going to go to the attacker's webpage instead. And you won't know the difference because you'll still see bank.com on your web browser.
That's next week on Australia's premier independent tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Time to talk Ice TV.
What's Ice TV?
That's a very good question. The man sitting next to us is probably the best situation to answer that. Adam, what's Ice TV?
Ice TV is an electronic program guide, and what that basically is that the guide that you would read in the newspaper about what's going to be on for the next 7 days, but in an electronic format that a video recorder can read. Not a video recorder like your videotape recorder, but some of the new ones.
You mean
the
a PVR, that, personal video recorder.
I was getting to that. I was trying not to baffle people with acronyms too early.
Yeah, no, yes, good, good.
A personal video recorder, something with a hard drive in it or maybe a DVD burner in it.
Now, PVRs you buy and set, like they seem to come in set-top boxes these days, don't
you
they?
You can either build one into a computer. The new versions of Windows, yeah, some of them have it in it.
Dr. Ron's into that. He's got
his with his media center.
Media center will do it. Or you can buy, there are a couple of brands such as Topfield and stuff, which are basically a digital set-top box, but with a hard drive in it so you can record shows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this electronic program guide does is you can download it and transfer it to your PVR, so then you can call up on the screen and say, right, show me the TV guide for the next 7 days, and you can flick through the TV guide on the screen and say, oh, there's a good movie on Sunday night, and click on it, and it'll record it for you.
Oh, that's handy.
Now, if you lived in Europe, for example, all this information is broadcast embedded in the television signal, so anyone can watch it. And most of the DVD recorders and stuff we own here have the ability to take a seven-day program guide from the broadcast signal, except the television networks here refuse to put one in. All they broadcast is the information about what's on now and what's on next, and half the time that's wrong anyway.
So they're not known for their punctuality times, especially more recent times.
Yeah, yeah, well, so, That's the next question. If you do put this into your video recorder and try to record
the chances of getting it.
Well, you still need...
Why did it record at the wrong time? Because
you still need a margin of error. These things usually let your program anywhere between 5 and 30 or 60 minutes worth of margin of error. So, okay, I'll start
only
a little
60
bit
minutes.
It depends if you're watching Channel 9 or not. If it's Channel 9, you need more than that.
I don't know about... but I don't know a single television network in Australia that actually broadcasts shows at the time that they say they will.
Well, one of their great tricks is starting a show late, so you miss the start of the shows on the other program, so you'll stick with that show because you've missed the start of everything else.
Yeah.
The thing is, they keep trying to outdo each other and get later and later and later.
So this program guide won't work?
Well, it will work. You've got to have a bit of a margin for error, but it will generally work. And so most things start within about 5 minutes. Until you get later into the night, it gets worse. So you can download this program guide. And this company called Ice TV puts together the program guide for all of the television networks in Australia. You pay, I think it's $100 a year. You download it to your computer once a day or once a week, whatever. Transfer.
So
it
it's a subscription type sort of thing.
It's a subscription thing. Now, their problem is that Channel 9 claims that they are infringing on their copyright because Channel 9 claims that they own copyright over their TV schedule. Now, the copyright law says you can't copyright a list of facts. You can only copyright, we'll say, a creative work, something where some creative effort has gone into it. And I say, well, this is just a list of facts.
Yeah, it's
just
in the public domain anyway.
It's in the public domain. Yeah. Nine says, no, it's not. We own the copyright on it. Now,
the fact that shows never start on time, I've thought of the perfect defense for Nine. They can say, well, our TV schedule is actually a work of fiction.
Adam,
never accurate, and therefore they can claim copyright
Adam,
on it.
Stop helping them.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, if they win, it's my fault. You can blame me. But that would be the perfect defense. Just admit that it's a work of fiction. So they are having... They have Nine have taken them to court, and they're still waiting on a decision from that. But that hasn't stopped Ice TV from moving forward. And one of the things they've just started talking about in the last week is they're going to release a video on demand service within the next couple of months. Where if you've got initially, it will only work with computers like a Windows Media Center, and then they're going to extend it to their other set top boxes. Other set-top boxes that are compatible with Ice TV, you will be able to take TV shows and stream them and watch them through whichever device it is that you're using, such as your personal video recorder on your television.
So instead of waiting for the TV network to show it, you can download it.
Yes. You can look what's on the TV guide using Ice, and if you don't like what's there, you can flick to the other page and click something and download it and watch it. So Nine's
That's
gonna
a good idea.
Nine's going to hate them even more.
Don't you think that the networks like Channel 9 and the larger organisations are actually pushing more and more people onto the internet to download or to do exactly what they don't
Absolutely.
Want them to do, that is to download movies online?
Nine has encouraged people to steal stuff off the web more than anyone else in this country. It started off with the way they treated Star Trek. Anyone who's a Star Trek fan knows how bad it was treated by Nine. It was meant to start at 11. It would start at 12. It would start at 1.
Or
and
it
that
wouldn't
was
be on
fine.
At all.
Or it wouldn't be on. But there was only nerds like
night.
Me.
Can I just
but
say...
But they made a huge tactical error because by doing it to Star Trek, the people that they annoyed were the nerds like us.
But that was
And we were the ones who could figure out how to download it.
But that was fine. They didn't
care because
we were only a minority. But then they started doing it to shows like West Wing that normal people watch, not just nerds like us.
Well, they pushed it across the ABC. It was the best thing for it, really, wasn't it? Because you could watch it without a commercial in it.
But The Sopranos and West Wing and normal shows started getting treated the same way. So normal, non-nerdy people started saying to their nerdy friends, you know how you download Star Trek? Could you download West Wing for me?
And, of course,
me?
The nerds have already set up these huge BitTorrent networks and so on that people use. So
I can
too easy.
All the people that I know who watch things like Lost,
24. Yep.
They've all seen the current House. Series. They're not interested in watching it when it goes to air on Channel 7. They've all seen it.
That's exactly right.
Anything that's on in Australia that's from the UK or from the US, you can download from BitTorrent.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's already been on there, and within a day or two of it screening somewhere overseas, it's up on BitTorrent, and you can get it down. If it's only just gone up, you can get it down an hour show in almost an hour.
Now, we should say that this possibly is strictly not legal.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there.
But
but it's reality. It's what people do these days.
What people do it, yeah.
Yeah, and we had Greg Williams on the show recently, last year, and he was sort of saying, well, if they're going to sue you, they can only sue you for their loss of damages. So providing you're not out there, it's private
moment,
personal use.
Yep.
It's
so
not
the loss is what you would have paid for it on DVD if you'd gone out and bought it.
Yeah, what, $19?
But you're not being sued
by
them.
Can't buy it on DVD.
Yeah, well, you can't buy it on DVD, or maybe not in your region. But if you're being sued by the TV networks, when what are they saying? What have they lost? Nothing except a potential eyeball.
Mm.
But there you go. You think they protect their revenue stream a little bit by actually, maybe making it easier for people to watch these sort of programs rather than harder.
Well, what if they put it on their website so that you could download the show when you wanted to and had to pay $2 for it?
They're starting to do that. You can now buy episodes of McLeod's Daughters for $1.95, as exciting as that is. And it will
I don't think I've ever
there.
Watched a single episode of McLeod's Daughters, but
it's chick flick.
But it is a step in the right direction.
For Nine, that's a huge step.
And absolutely.
And 10 and the others are starting to do it. Not so much 7, they're sort of lag behind a bit. But 9 and 10, what they've started doing now is when they get a new show on, like Supernatural or Justice or something like that, they'll put the first episode up on the web for you to see before it even goes to air. And then each week, maybe a day after it's gone to air, they will put it on the web for people to watch it. And I think that's a much smarter way of doing it.
And I think that the popularity and the convenience of watching something when you choose to watch it that's current, people will be prepared to pay a fair price for it. Not an extortionate price that like your $400 for your DVD box set. But maybe the per episode price of a few dollars is not outrageous.
Well, when we eventually get some decent video content on the Australian iTunes store, and so then you can then plug in an Apple TV.
iTunes, who don't sell a single video
not in
the Australian market at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, but once they do that, because an Apple TV, in my opinion, is not worth owning until they do that. I've played with it. It's very nice, but...
Have you got one?
No, I borrowed one for review. I've reviewed it for magazines.
Yep.
And it's very nice to play with.
But for me, it would just be an expensive paperweight because it doesn't do what I want to do because the iTunes store doesn't have what I want. When the iTunes store starts listing episodes of Lost, then we will find out who is prepared to pay and how much they're prepared to pay. Someone needs to get out there and test the water.
Absolutely.
Well, if you look back at iTunes when it had its music dilemma, like it launched in the US and in other parts of the world before it launched here, the thing that was holding it back in this country was the record companies. They didn't have the appropriate agreements in place.
Yep.
Are we seeing the same thing here with the television markets, with the broadcasters? Are they holding it back?
This is what I didn't understand because I was sure that they wouldn't release Apple TV here until they had a content deal. And they would do what they did with iTunes. They come out and say, look, we've got this great content deal, and as of today, you can buy Apple TV and you can watch Lost. But instead, they just released Apple TV everywhere in the world. So it's fantastic if you live in the United States. If you live in somewhere like Australia, it's like, yeah, well, great. I just watched a video podcast. What do I do now?
Yeah, well, this is where Juiced is looking like they're going to try and sort of pick up a few peaches. If you've got
the bandwidth, though, that's the difference between Juiced and, we'll say, YouTube, is Juiced runs with BitTorrent on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So while you're watching a show, A, you're sucking it down really fast, but you're also pumping it up really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're on Telstra, you're getting it both ways. You're paying for it coming and going. So only a fool on Telstra would use Juiced.
Well, yes, that's the thing. And what Adam's referring to is you get charged for uploading as well on Telstra.
One of the few ISPs.
About the only one, I think, is it? Oh, there might be one other or something.
One or two. Very, very few.
Yes. But, all right, so getting the crystal ball out, Adam, the digital lounge room, which allegedly is your speciality, according to your website, what are we going to be seeing in 5 years' time? Are we going to see the television networks find their niche? That is that they're no longer broadcasters of soapies and sitcoms because we can all get them on demand. They're no longer the broadcasters of movies because we get them on demand, or we go to our video library and we download or we get our Blu-ray DVDs and we watch by far better quality without the commercial breaks that we see on television stations. Are they going to become maybe just newscasters? Is that their destiny at the moment?
I think that if they're smart, they will become part of a larger system. They will learn from what the record companies have done with music.
Have they learned, though? I don't think they've learned.
I think they maybe have a bit. Because look what's happening.
At EMI.
But look what's happening in the US with video available on iTunes, right? Now, they've embraced that much faster. We'll say CBS putting stuff on iTunes CBS have just done a deal with Juiced, I think. Much faster than any of the record labels ever did deals with anybody for music online. So they have looked at what the music industry have done and thought, sitting there sticking your head in the sand and then trying to sue everybody does not work.
Uh-huh.
It's clear.
It's an 80s business model, really, when you think about it.
Yeah. So they will learn from that. They are learning from that. You can see that they're moving a lot faster than the music industry did. The question is, I think that they will become part of the system. It will be because the line between what's your television and what's your internet will all sort of blur. So they will see where their niche model is. But it won't move as fast as we think it will. I was going to say that us nerds think, oh, you know, in 5 years' time, television will be dead. No. Think about your non-nerdy friends. You tell them you watch television or anything but a television, and they look at you like you're from Mars. Television will be around for a long time because there are a lot of non-tech savvy people who like to be able to go click and sit down and watch it and don't think about things like subscriptions and bandwidths and compression rates and codecs and stuff. I just want to watch the television. And those people will be around for a very long time.
But aren't we seeing that now with iTunes? We're seeing people just downloading songs and throwing the old traditional album format away because kids of today, oh, here's a great song. Download it, share it with the next person around them.
Yep. But and it's not just the nerds that are doing it.
No, it's
exactly.
Not. iTunes
and that's
is designed
point.
For non-nerds. And this
but this is where ITV's come out.
Apple TV will drive this because Apple TV. Yes. Yeah, I made the mistake too. And someone,
I think Bill Jobs has made it. I mean, who is he? Steve Jobs has made this.
Yeah.
Wrong person, wrong company. Yes.
Yeah. Apple TV will do the same thing, I think, when the content is there that the iPod has did. The iPod took digital music to people who didn't know what digital music was. I think the Apple TV will take video downloads to people who don't know and don't want to know what video downloads are. I just want to push a button and it will work. Apple TV is that simple. It's a very elegant solution, very nice to use. But until the content's there, it's useless to me. But I think that's what will drive it, is things like Apple TV where it's actually easy.
And just to go to your point about what's going to happen to the free-to-air TV stations, all you've got to do to find out is to look,
finger at me.
Is to look at what's happened to radio stations, in that radio has survived the moves away from radio to television, the moves away from radio to other media. And it still exists, and there's no shortage of commercial radio stations making good money they're just doing something slightly different than they used to before. And I think that's what's going to happen to television in the future as well.
Also, look, a lot of radio stations put a lot of their content online as podcasts, and people still listen to
them. Well, absolutely. Time shifting.
Yeah.
It's the best thing. You look at the national broadcast, ABC, like, who can listen to the science show at, 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon? I've got other things to do, but I can do it on the train on the way in.
The commercial networks, too, seem to have really embraced podcasting and put a lot of their content online.
Absolutely.
And the television stations will go, oh, no, we don't have to do that. But they're starting to because they can see that that's the model, and it hasn't killed radio.
Mm.
Podcasting is still there. People still listen to the radio. It doesn't matter what. Same with newspapers. Newspapers will take a long time before they completely die. But as you were saying, newspapers have had to change what they do and become a bit of a specialty thing. Newspapers don't try to tell you what happened yesterday because the web can tell you what happened 5 minutes ago.
Well, that's a valid point, really. If you look at newspapers, like I think Rupert Murdoch recently said, we've got to put it up online before we put it in print, because they used to hang on to it and print it, then put it online.
But
now, with the way that the world is changing, we're seeing these things happen at a ferocious rate.
But they're learning these lessons the hard way. I used to work for the Age newspaper, and they found when they were covering the Atlanta Olympics, the journalists couldn't figure out why the competition were beating them on all these stories. And then they found out that when they were sending the stories back to Melbourne, it was being put up online straight away. So their competition got to read their stories before their competition had to file. Mm. So they've got to find a way to do this that still creates a viable model.
The USB has made it into, the USB ports have made it into the new model cars for plugging your iTunes and any MP3 player into your car stereo system these days. What are we going to see in the living room? Are we going to be able to find that through Apple TV and those sort of things that we're going to be able to just seamlessly play a DVD, a Blu-ray through this one magical little box? Are we going to record our things?
The Apple TV
that?
Is a very specialized device. It's not the all things to all men that you would maybe think it would be. What they've done is they've built a box that works with iTunes, and that's all it does. Because the more complicated they make it, the harder it is for people to use, and the more likely there is something to go wrong with it. But it's the beginnings of that. There are boxes around, things like there's a mob about to start selling something called a BeyondWiz, and I think it's a DPS-1 is their first model, and it's a twin high-definition tuner. It's a DVD player. It plays stuff from your network drive. It'll work with Ice TV. You'll be able to use their video-on-demand service. It will do practically everything, mm-hmm. but only nerds like me will probably buy them, which is fine because I really want one. But, I've got to the point where I don't think you should buy an appliance without Ethernet in. My next toaster is going to have Ethernet.
I couldn't agree more. I haven't understood for ages why video recorders haven't had an Ethernet port in the back so you can program it with a web browser. Well, it'd be so much easier than pushing little buttons on the front of it.
That's what Ice TV is going to let you do, because Ice TV has an online service where if your device is compatible with Ice TV, you can get on from the web for anywhere you are and say, oh, I forgot to tape that show. Click, I want to tape it. Now, Topfield makes some of the better hard drive personal video recorders around, but they refuse to put Ethernet in their boxes. And so Ice TV came out last week and said, this is the last Topfield we're going to support unless it's got Ethernet. Actually, it's the last PVR, full stop, we will support without Ethernet, because they want to drive this model of what you're talking about, of doing it online. Yeah. And by supporting boxes that don't have Ethernet, what's the point?
But you would think, too, that if you wanted to record a program or record something on air, whatever it is, you'd want to move that video off onto another server or off onto another hard drive if you wanted to keep it for a bit longer.
You run out of space. They don't want you to.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. So,
It depends which they is in control. Yeah.
So what do you think about Blu-ray, Adam? Have you delved much with that technology yet? Have you seen much of it?
I've seen Blu-ray. I haven't seen HD DVD yet. I've seen Blu-ray. It is very nice. You do need a very big television to tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got something less than, we'll say...
And a big disposable income.
Yes. Deep pockets to get the big television. If you've got something less than, we'll say, a 37-inch widescreen television, you will struggle to see the difference between Blu-ray and DVD, and you will struggle to see the difference between high and standard definition television. Once you get up past 37, 40, I've seen the big 50-inch plasmas, you can see the difference between Blu-ray and DVD, because DVD in standard definition starts to look shabby. There's just not enough information to fill the screen properly.
I think you've nailed it there. In one, it's not so much the delivery platform, it's really what you're watching it on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, if you've got a little small telly, you're not going to notice the difference between VHS and Blu-ray, really, are you? So, are you seeing any new technologies? Like, I know Dr. Ron mentioned the new Sony, the organic LEDs coming out very shortly. Do you think we're going to see any new technology in televisions come along fairly shortly?
I wouldn't say fairly shortly, because LCD and plasma are sort of slugging it out now, and I think that they're fairly well
entrenched. There's stuff that's always on the horizon. There's always something coming up. But I wouldn't say, you know, not within the next 2 or 3 years. I don't think you're going to have something that overnight will just push LCD and plasma completely off the shelves. Mm-hmm. Although I don't think either of them are quite as good as a very good old CRT yet.
No, I was going to ask you the same thing. I'm very much a believer of the good old 100Hz CRT screens, widescreen.
If you've got a very nice 100Hz CRT widescreen, look after it. If it's a Lerva, get the power supply replaced before it catches on fire.
Yes, there is a warranty recall for those of you who have those old good tellies.
Yeah, because if you've got one of them, hang on to it, because you will probably find that if you've got an eye for detail and you look at these new ones, they don't look as good.
Well, I must admit, I've walked into the major manufacturer, that's like the JBs and the big resellers, and you walk down there and there's just walls and walls and walls. Lots of walls of these huge television sets. I don't know where they can find all the space to actually store them all, but the quality of them, they're not a pinch compared to some of the new, some of the old CRT large 81 centimeter, 1 centimeter widescreen sets.
At least the lines are straight. On your CRTs, your square boxes have got wavy lines down the sides.
Have they?
Haven't they?
I don't know. You tell me. Oh, goodness me. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and Odd Spot, Gadget and Website of the Week. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of a...
This week, for the Gadget of the Week, we've got a beauty. It's for all those people who've got a home, a band or something like that, that they're doing home recordings. This is
Doing podcasting.
Be great for podcasters, yep. People recording shows and things. It's a little 8-channel mixing desk and recording system that your iPod plugs into.
Oh, look, that's just exactly what you need.
It's got an iPod port. You just plug your iPod straight into it, and it does the 8-track mixing and recording straight onto your iPod hard disk.
At last, someone's finally come up with a good use for an iPod. Just slot it in, and you forget all about it. And
it's what I've always been waiting for. Put me down for one for Christmas.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's got all the ins and outs and all the controls you'd ever want. And, multi-track onto your iPod. And it's even got USB ports, so you can send the output straight up onto your iTunes.
That's good. The USB. Any mention of the price or anything in the article, Graham?
Yeah, surprisingly enough, I'm assuming this is US dollars.
Yeah, it's off Uber Gizmo, so it's out of the States. Yeah.
US dollars, $500.
So what's that? On the current currency rate, it's about $500, isn't it?
Almost, yeah.
All right, so there's a good Christmas present, a good little 8-track mixer, there's mics in and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
as well.
Alesis, A-L-E-S-I-S is the band name of the unit.
So. Never heard of them.
No.
But that's all right. It
looks really
if
cool.
It works. Terrific. Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
And this week, it's something of a more practical sort of website, because I used it the other day. I had a web designer design me some really nice stuff, and he said, I got the font off Free Fonts, which is a place where you can go and download lots of fonts for your Macintosh or your PC, but I couldn't find it. So I figured, well, I might as well tell everybody else about it. So if you're ever looking for a special font, if you do any of that sort of stuff, or someone maybe...
If you're designing flyers or your company newsletter or whatever you're doing,
someone came to me the other day and said, where do I get this from? I said, well, try 1001freefonts.com. Now, these sites are great, but just be wary because they do try and get you to buy a font. but you just got to read the fine print and make sure you download one of the legitimate, real free fonts. Otherwise, they'll take you off to Adobe's thing and flog you $49 US for a font. But
you've got to watch what you're clicking on is actually part of the website and not just an ad.
They take you off to all sorts of other things. Yeah. But well worth it if you're into that sort of thing in any way, shape or form. It's a great place to go and try and download something which is going to make your next design something special.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This one just off the wire, and it appealed to my sense of humor. But also because we've got, as you guys have been saying, a lot of nerds in here this evening. You've got to be really proud of the Tamil Tigers, I would have thought. They've managed to actually hack into Intelsat. That's to beam their programs around the world.
That's a good effort.
That's not a bad effort, really, I thought. Yeah. Tamil Tiger rebels in Sri Lanka have been illegally using a satellite of a US giant Intelsat to beam their radio and television broadcasts overseas. Now, if that's not taking pirate television to the next level, I don't know what is.
If they're smart enough to break in and Intelsat's not smart enough to stop them, then good luck to them.
I reckon. So I wonder what channel they're on. You probably just go for a bit of a... search up your Intelsat receiver until you can find the Tamils. The Liberation Tamil Tigers, the LTTE, fighting for independence in Sri Lanka's northern and eastern regions, has been blacklisted as a terrorist organisation by the United States since 1997, but they've managed to crack into their satellites. That's wonderful, isn't it? You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Adam Turner has been our very special guest this evening. Adam, thank you very much. Hopefully it's been as much pleasure having a chat. Hopefully
and an honour. Thank you very much.
We'll do something in the near future, maybe on a semi-regular basis. Hint, hint.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I'd be happy to.
All right. Next week, we're going to talk about some latest exploits, I believe, for your internet browser. You've heard a few promos through the program this evening. All things to listen to and take heed of, and what the little shonksters are up to these days. Graham, you probably see a few of those things in your travels.
Oh, certainly
you?
Do, yes.
Cleaning up other people's IE exploits. Have you run SpyBot lately on your machine?
Yeah, regularly.
How often do you run it?
Once every couple of weeks, maybe.
Yeah, and you still find double clicks and all that sort of stuff?
Oh, I'd always find something. Usually it's a fairly innocuous cookie these days, but every now and then it finds something a bit nastier.
It's well worth it, especially if you play games like my kids are doing at the moment, so watch out, everybody.
You've got to have a separate computer for your kids.
Yeah, exactly. One that you can format and start again, really, isn't it?
Exactly.
All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Till the same time next week, it's bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.